Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Leona Brando, New Vision Organization, and we will be interviewing today a special guest, Rowena Andrews. She is a native of Southern Illinois, earned her bachelor's degree in psychology and child and family and community counseling in Springfield, Illinois. In addition, Rowena served 3 years in the military, later became a teacher, a motivational speaker, writer, and an artist. Rowena is in the process of starting up a life skill coaching practice, the Village Griot, as well as networking and supporting upcoming entrepreneurs that actively seek to build communities through education. And I will talk about that later on in the broadcast. Her plan is to finish her doctorate in special education with an emphasis on mental health. She is currently a DBA, and her dissertation topic is Disproportionate Discipline in the Classroom to Prison Pipeline. Has a lot to do with our topic discussion today. And I'd like to have Rowena maybe say a little bit more about herself, and then we can get into the show. Rowena, are you on with us?
Yes, I am. I want to thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us. I feel honored that you're on our show today. Would you like to say a little bit more about yourself before we get into the topic, and maybe you can tell us exactly, you know, what you've been doing and what you will be doing?
Well, actually, yes. I'm a mother of three kids, actually four. I raised my niece, and now they're all grown and college graduates are just finishing up. So some of the things that I've done as a single parent is basically kind of repeated that which I grew up in. So I tend to look at my life and what drove me to take the path that I did. And so basically on my struggles and successes, I observed a lot of things. People don't do so good if they don't know any better. And through me being exposed to people, they gave me opportunities to view a better way of thinking, a better way of doing things. And so this gave me the motivation, because we all search for significance. And in my significance, all the things that you talked about, I felt like, you know, I would rather teach somebody and give back what was given to me.
And I think it's great that you've gone through it all. I think going through it, having that life experience, really contributes a lot, you know, to what you are doing, especially to be able to go to college, be able to do what you did, in spite of raising children as a single parent.
Well, thank you. We don't look at it like that. I guess, you know, the narrative is there. It's a matriarchal family, and a lot of times that's due to poverty and a lot of things that affect the black community. So the thing is, most women and most families, even the fathers who are not there, we experience what we don't know what to do and how to get out of the situations that we're in. And if we don't know how, you know, my job is to try to find ways and strategies to teach and to give people so that they can learn how. And usually when somebody has that kind of knowledge, they start building a future for themselves and for their children.
Exactly. Exactly. We have so many kids out in the streets today, out in the communities, that are lacking so much. They're lacking the role models. They don't have the parent or the father or the mother in the home. You know, and there's just so much out there, especially, as you say, people of color, they go through it even worse than the Caucasian race. But the prisons are so full right now, and there's so much going on in the prisons. And this prison pipeline is something that is very important that we discuss, and very important that some things be done about it, because kids today, they don't stand a chance. They don't. And those that have been in the prison for years, they started out as young people that ended up in prison. Some of them have been in 20 years, 30 years. And they just lock them up and throw away the key. There's no hope. They're feeling helpless. And in the prisons, they're not getting the rehabilitation they should be getting. As a matter of fact, so many prisoners are being targeted. And, you know, they're being deprived, provoked, harassed. There's no rehabilitation whatsoever going on in the prisons. And in the streets, these kids are heading in the same path.
You're right. that goes to back rather the reason why I'm speaking to you today. So based on what you're going through with rehabilitation, you're talking about the lack of rehabilitation in prison is because the view of prison changed from becoming a it was never an institution where they were going to say rehabilitate and train people. And you have to look at our history as Black people. It was a way in which to, an alternative way in which to create a slave base legally based on the Constitution. So as we came out of Jim Crow, slavery, all these things like this, it was just another way to disenfranchise us. And as you can see, it's the viewpoints. A lot of people don't want to believe that they are, you know, racist. And it starts in that when they, you talk about the classroom, the prison pipeline, it really starts in the attitudes and the way that discipline is applied towards a kid of color as opposed to the what the majority at that time. And so we start, when I was researching it, doing all the empirical articles, is the attitude of a kid. And you can even see it now. It's easier for people to say and discuss. But now with social media and our access to online resources and things like that, you can actually compare how the crimes are, the allegations of a crime and the punishments are applied starting from, I want to say kindergarten. They used to say classroom, but now they say pre-K classroom. And eventually when you're giving one kid the different punishment than you give the kid of the majority. And as you can see with the adult cases, a young man can, he can have a crime where he used a gun to do robbery, and he compared it to the kids of not color. They get, say, probation, and the kid of color gets 26 years. So when it starts young, yeah, they get, they have often by the time they get in school, they don't have the resources at that school. This is a school in an impoverished neighborhood. So then they will get suspensions and then expulsions. And then they're walking the streets. And then they get, now they're going to get arrest record. And eventually those kids with nothing to do will end up in the penal system.
Exactly. You know, I received an email today from a mother. She had sent a copy of it. She wrote to the prison in one of the states. Her son is has mental illness, and he apparently was on disability prior to being sent to prison. He's supposed to be coming home, I guess, in 3 months, in December. He's supposed to be going home. And the mother's been trying to get them to start working on his application to have his disability reinstated. During the time he was in prison, they had him in solitary confinement so long that he actually, his condition it worsened. And so she got a response from the prison staff telling her that they will be doing the evaluation, reevaluation, and they will be working on it, but it's too soon. And 3 months is not too soon, especially when you're trying to either get on the disability or when you're trying to have your previous disability reinstated. I think that having them, knowing that this person was in having mental illnesses, to put him in solitary confinement, first of all, was ridiculous. And now they're taking their sweet time about getting him reinstated with the Social Security disability. And then I received a call from another prisoner, and he's been targeted. He's been targeted by prison staff, prison officials, and trying to get help has been, it's been terrible because no one has been willing to help him. We have lawyers out there that should be helping, and the lawyers today are either fearful or they just take one-sided stories. They're judging people based on what they hear, and they're supposed to be the ones that prove a person innocent or prove a person's claim without judging, and these are the things that are happening now. So we have civil rights organizations that are doing nothing. We have lawyers that are not stepping up. And what happens with these prisoners when they are thrown in solitary confinement or when they are targeted? They don't have any resources. They don't have any sources to turn, anywhere to turn. And this is a problem, too. So we talk about the targeting, the racism, and all the things that are going on in the prisons, and yet they have no outlet. And then you hear of riots going on all over the country. Prisoners, when they can't get help from the outside, when no one will hear them, you know, when no one will help them, then they turn to rioting or food strikes or whatever it might be. But
yes,
there's so much.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's a lot. But, you know, the idea is that if this is a oppressive system that we're in, and you're saying that lawyers don't do enough, the idea is that we have to educate and empower our families and our communities because, as you know, they're not going to do much. And as you know, they're out there, they're needing money as well. And a lot of lawyers, they can't afford to do pro bono work. So I know what you're saying. They say that it's too early. And you have to understand the onus of financial support for that inmate is usually the family, which, of course, when that person went in, that family was probably already financially weak. And so the only thing that we really can do is network and find opportunities and agencies and even after we have to create some of our own in order to help that person when they get out. And that's what I'm finding. I'm finding that if we make a bigger impact together than we can do alone. So as we teach young kids while they're, I'm going back to that classroom to prison pipeline. If we teach our kids in middle school, high school, how to become self-sufficient, to build their skills, we can teach them how to become entrepreneurs. And then we're not saying be rich, you're going to be rich, but in order to just take care of yourself. And so then as we do it now, we build in our communities. Those young men and those young women, they may come out and have some support, some kind of support system. And so what I do now is I collect information from all the agencies in my community that I can ever learn what they provide and if I can give a referral. So that's basically what I'm doing. I guess we have to implement a crisis management plan. And it's
A crisis measurement plan. That's what needs to be put in place. And like I said, not only in the schools, but also in the prisons. You know, there's no accountability, and there has to be someone. And you mentioned the resources on the outside. I still say the prisons should be closed down, and long-term residential facilities should be established. You know, for the work, the type of work you do. You know, teaching the life skills, coaching, and things like that. You know, the psychological issues. These are the things that if they had established more long-term facilities and had people like yourself in there working with these not only adolescents but the adults as well. You know, men, women, and youth. And if there were more facilities established out there, and it would be a lot more effective than what's going on in the prisons today. It would be a lot more effective than what's going on, even in the schools sometimes. Services need to be improved.
Yeah,
but we need to, like you said, we're not getting it from the lawyers. And the lawyers won't even take it if you offer them money. It's almost like they're afraid of going up against certain people or whatever. But it is, as far as uniting as a group across the country, to try to work on these kind of issues, to have these programs on the outside, you know, to have more people with their degrees in psychology and their degrees in life skills, coaching practices and all that. That's what they need,
and
more of it.
And criminal justice.
Exactly.
Yes, and criminal justice. We need a multi-disciplinary team. And we need to, you know, like that's what that important thing of networking is, you know. We find out what each and every person knows, what we can bring, who we can bring into the equation. And then from there, we can do something holistic. But, you know, it's going to take a lot of us to become civic-minded, you know, because a lot of the people that are in office, you know, if we do not get involved in the voting process, and it has nothing to do with our personal beliefs about our vote, like it doesn't matter. You can see if it didn't matter, they wouldn't so try to oppose it. We wouldn't even have this mess we have in politics today. So we need to vote at the local level as well when we're voting for president. We need to move people out of office who are not going to help us. And we also need to learn how to even, like, talk to each other and come together and come up with some of these things that we say our community is suffering from. You know, I can also plug in. I'm in North Carolina right now, and there's an opportunity for kids to have an outlet because a lot of our kids do not have outlets, and especially in the impoverished neighborhoods. So I can spend this time is I'm working with this new partnership with the T.J. Robinson Life Center, and it's going to be the biggest sports center and life skills counseling agency, and will serve up clients up the East Coast from up to New York all the way down to Florida. And so they're putting together this and trying to get the financial backing, the completion, so that those kids and their parents can have something to do. We involve their elderly in the community, and this is a diverse, they're going to have a juvenile diversion program so you can instill integrity and respect in the youth. Let's also show them that somebody cares. So that puts in those pieces that all the things that we need to do, we have to get together and put those pieces together. So instead of us saying, you know, being stuck with accepting that we have all these issues in our communities, that we're actually doing something about it.
Exactly. That's it. Doing something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because these things, if they're not addressed, if they're not, you know, it's even, like I say, with the things that are going on in the prisons, they have certain programs. They don't have the appropriate programs sometimes, or they don't allow them to they pick and choose who's going to have some of these programs, who's going to be able to participate in them. But there's so many things even in the schools. There's so many things in the communities. And people do a lot of talking, and they talk about a lot of money, but they don't really do anything. You know, all the money that's going, it's going in all different directions. But I don't see, and I'm sure you in a lot of cases don't see anything being done. And even you talk about the roads. You know, I have to laugh when I look at the roads, and the roads are falling apart. They end up hiring cheap labor, people that do use cheap labor, cheap material. And before you know it, within a couple of years, all the hundreds of thousands of dollars put into these things is wasted because they have to do it all over again. And that's the same with counseling. That's the same with these kids and these adolescents, even the adults, when they go for counseling. They patch it. They do patchwork. They don't do complete and extensive therapy. They don't do extensive psychological treatment. They patch it up, and that treatment is not, even in the prisons, especially in the prisons, they contract out with certain people for medical and for psychological, but yet they have control over it. It's happened so many times when the contracted providers that they have will recommend one thing with the patient, with the prisoner, and the somebody will override their decision. The evaluations that they do, they evaluate most prisoners as either antisocial, or they evaluate them as some kind of unnecessary diagnosis. But these are the things. And they have a habit of saying prisoners are uncooperative when they put them in solitary, or when they do something with them and they don't have any justification as to why they're doing these things, their excuse will be, oh, they're uncooperative. They say this with so many prisoners. And that's why treatment is not being done.
Yes, but you can also understand, too, that our system is even though they say that they're not, everybody knows that the U.S. prisoners, they're the least rehabilitated in the world when you compare them to other prisoners, other prison systems, China, over any other country.
Germany.
And because the same thing, yes, and the same thing that you say, our inmates are treated inhumanely. And so the thing is this, when we start changing some of those things and, you know, you see crowding, unsanitary conditions, poor nutrition, inhumane treatment, and then you'll hear some people come out and say, prison was the best thing that happened to me. So we have a community
issue. Yeah, those are the ones that aren't, those are the ones that are only in for a very short time. Look at Norfolk, Massachusetts. Norfolk Prison. There, the drinking water is so bad it's turning the teeth of the prisoners brown. And there's been a lot of activism over that because the water is so bad. And you know what? I'll tell you, I've traveled 11 third world countries. I've seen bad water. And I'll tell you, this is the United States. This is the kind of water that they're giving the prisoners. I can't believe that this country can have such nasty, nasty water, broken up roads, everything about it. This is worse sometimes than a third world country. And we have, we're supposed to be a powerful country, the leader.
Yeah, we have a powerful country. We also have a racist infrastructure. So if you remember now, when President Obama was in office, anything that he proposed to build the infrastructures, the train systems, the roads, the Republicans, they vetoed it. They was like, no, not absolutely not. So that affects us. And then when you understand that they privatize a prison, the families are really responsible for anything above what they need for the prisoners, like, you know, soap, sanitary things, food, other than the basic, what they consider that is not nutritionally valuable. And so then you have a poor family supporting a inmate, and they say, well, it starts in the family. The inmate didn't get what he needed in the family. So again, if you have places like, say, where is it, Flint, where the water is, caused so many diseases.
Oh, that's another one.
And detrimental to their health. They're not really going to focus on the water in the prison system unless somebody on the outside, you know, is going in there and maintaining, you know, doing as a liaison to see that these people are being taken care of. So we got a lot of spots in the community. We got a lot of spots in the prison system. And unless we do what we call building in the community, we're not going to be able to affect any of those areas. So it's like
I think the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, to me, they should be on top of all of these things. Amnesty International, NAACP even. These are organizations that should be really, really focusing on a lot of these issues because these issues are big. These issues are big. And I don't know what it is they're doing with their money other than I know they're working on the immigration issue. I know the ACLU is. But this is something that is very, very important. This is also a matter of lives, you know, with the things that are going on. And they're just not, they're not doing it. They're not.
They're not.
And that's what's failing this country. It's failing the citizens of the country.
Yes, because one of the things is you have to understand, we talk about it all the time, even in our neighborhoods, you know, what's the most important thing? We like to have public safety. Economic necessity. We need all those things to be in our neighborhoods in order for us to even begin to become productive. And then we also know that they have to be able to get a job when they get out. So the conditions that existed before they went in, they're institutionalized once they come in, and then they go out, and it's even worse. So there's so many things. Like I said, we have to, you know, collaborate with other professionals and other agencies, and we really have to start making our community members aware of what their power is. There's power in the black dollar. There's power in the churches. And if we can't even get into the churches, and the churches have been so traditionally, you know, not aware of how to deal with mental illness, how to deal with the financial successes of the communities that they're in?
I don't think the churches, the pastors, the priests or whatever, I don't think they get involved enough. They should get involved more, I think. But that's, you know, but as far as a lot of these prisoners, they learn the law. These lawyers could take them in and when they come out and use them as well, even if they paid them a stipend, something. But use their services, and that way they'll be able to provide more services to others that need it. You know, just give these prisoners an opportunity that have the legal knowledge to be able to work with lawyers. and a lot of them become lawyers eventually.
Well,
there's
so
much
to
do.
Yes, there is. I mean, there's so many ways to attack the problem. The little things that just we don't even think of. But I mean, if we look at some of the inmates who have taught themselves how to read while they're in prison, and a lot of them read the, you know, legal journals and things like that, and you'll see the outliers are the ones that come out, and then they get that little degree or whatever, and they go back in and they help other prisoners, because the only place we can't, there's not, the Project Innocence can only help so many. So even just teaching our kids how to read and how to be self-sufficient, programs like that, that's going to help us fight some of those things. Because like you said, there's so many needs there. You just said it. We got so many needs. We need rehabilitation. We need to re-educate. We need to educate. Some of our kids don't even know how to read, much less re-educate them.
Yeah.
And, so
and then they used to have, I don't know if it's still in existence, the Big Brother, Big Sister programs, where they would, you know, they take these kids in the without parents and do some things with them and help them. But you don't hear much about that anymore.
I hear a lot of arguing and debating. And one of the things that was most important that came up is, because we already know there is problems in the black family due to all the historical problems that we have faced, economic disenfranchisement. And although the people that don't want to agree that being in these conditions for 400 years is still impacting us, you can see the arguments being argued for help for other people. Say, for instance, President Trump calls the illegal alien. When they separated those kids from their parents, they were like, it's going to create all these years of trouble. So you have to see that, you know, we're learning that separating kids, creating these kind of conditions, they lead to generational problems. So we also know that punishment fails and rehabilitation works. So we have to do, it's on us to do the prevention, the cure, and to just build ourselves. And so we have to start with, like I said, it's most important is to let people know what kind of resources and agencies in our area that are working on the same thing. Because,
well,
like you said,
we want to pick up on this again too, Rowena, because this is a topic as well, and we're running out of time. But I'd like to know, if you'd like to come back again, we can pick up on this maybe in another week.
Yes, we can. And what I was going to say was, just before we go, the debate was a woman cannot raise a man. And so now we have to do something that's involving the men as well, not just the women coming up with all these suggestions and solutions. We need to learn how to pull these men in to help, you know, eventually help themselves and help our kids. So
exactly.
I would be glad to come back and talk.
Okay, well, we're going to be signing off pretty soon. And so, like I say, if possible, we'll have it in the following week. We'll maybe pick up on it next Saturday.
Yes,
and,
ma'am.
And then we can go further, because what I'd like to hear more from you on this, because I think it's really necessary, especially the way things are going now in the communities and in the prisons. And it's something that really sounds like it could be worked out with the right sources. And you seem to have some kind of an idea of where we could start with that. So we're going to sign off now, and we will pick up on this next week, and I will be in touch. Thank you very much, Rowena, for being with us, and signing off now.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.